as we're standing with this, we had a lot of discussions around this virtue of magnanimity, some of the other virtues that hook into that in various ways. And I think as we were doing that, we were getting a couple of things in our minds in some really nice ways. I think that virtue of magnanimity, as Aristotle talks about it in particular, really forces us to think about the character of the person more than getting caught in individual choices or individual actions. And I think it's one of the reasons why I chose it for the walk. I think the pattern that we have there is a pattern that we would be well advised to bring to thinking about virtue in ancient philosophy, and especially in Aristotle, across the board, to make sure that when we're reading Aristotle or thinking about his examples, we're thinking about them along the lines of the character of the person more than kind of action by action sort of thing. The way that we were forced to with magnanimity. So by doing it there, that might kind of get us in the groove to do it that way with other virtues too. And that's I think it's a little bit unusual in contemporary society for that to be the dominant framework. I think it illuminates some things in different ways than we're. I think it helps us to see things that we're not otherwise accustomed to seeing. Are you all looking at the sun as you look at me? I'm sorry. Am I all right? So maybe that's helpful to us a little bit. I just need one closing thought about that, and we can kind of then throw open the floor some other weird virtues. Thinking about that one still, I mentioned to us way back at kind of the parking lot, at stop zero, as it were, that for Aristotle, every virtue is both a pinnacle of excellence and also a mean, right? So the magnanimous person is at the summit or at the peak with regard to greatness, like with regards to worthiness for honor. So he's maximally worthy. You don't get any more worthy of honor than that, short of being God. Whereas the mean is in matching the honor that he's entitled to, or his desire to honor, to what he actually deserves. Right, so the honor that he judges himself worthy of is neither more nor less than what he actually is worthy of. In that way, he strikes a mean, but in another way, he gets to this pinnacle. And so the other virtues are going to work like that too. The courageous person is going to be at the pinnacle of judging accurately which things are worthy of fear and which are not. And at the mean, with regard to, for any particular thing, neither fearing it too much nor too little. Right? So on for other kinds of virtues. Virtues like generosity, or Taylor says liberality, free with your money in the right sort of way, not prodigal, wasting your money, but also not stingy or illiberal with your money. Spending money when it's appropriate, toward giving your money to the right people, whether that means buying goods or services or helping those in need or giving gifts to your friends or whatever it might be. Knowing the right times to give money and how much. And then neither exceeding nor being deficient in carrying that out. And also, as part of that same virtue, it's a two-for-one. Knowing the right times and how much to receive money, and being neither unwilling to receive money you should, nor willing to receive money that you shouldn't. So an excellence and also a balance point, neither over nor under shooting. In general questions and thoughts, or the question that I have for you or for us, we kind of got a nice start to this with Arizona, right? Bringing up this idea of humility at the last stop. Either if we have more to say about that, or if there are other things that either we or people around us or whomever might sometimes think of as virtues that seem a little bit hey, what about this? What could Aristotle do with this? Because he's given us a template now, a framework, that in theory ought to be able to apply to cases that never happened to come up for him, either because of the time and place that he lived, or just because, like, in the classroom where these notes were taken, nobody happened to ask that question that week, right? Like, that's, you know. Are there other cases, or more about the cases that we've seen, that we think demand some consideration? Yeah, please.
I'm still struggling with, you know, what is the threshold for worthiness? You know, do you have to have accomplished a certain number of virtues, or do you have to have achieved, I don't know if there are, like, levels of excellence, but, you know, could you be excellent at two virtues and still have some sort of threshold for...
Yeah. So, all right. That's a great question. Maybe I'll wheel out just a tiny bit more theory to try to put some guide rails on this a little bit. A couple of us were talking on the way over to this stop about how for the Greeks there were traditionally four or occasionally five cardinal virtues. Wisdom, justice, courage, and temperance or moderation. And then the fifth that sometimes made the list was piety. If there's five and not just four. Those virtues past a certain level of attainment. So there are habits around those that are independent of one another. Ethical virtues, which means a habit. But then there are more intellectualized versions of those virtues that are higher virtues. Once we're past mere habit into understanding and choice about the virtues, those cardinal virtues are supposed to entail each other. You can't have one at the higher levels without having the others. At the lower levels of just like basic habit, they can be discrete from each other. And then separate from that core set of four or five that are human virtues, that to be an excellent human, the suggestion is that you do need all four of those virtues in some appropriate degree. Like you can't, like just being excellent at being human means the good practical judgment that's at the lower orders of wisdom. Without good practical judgment, you're probably going to suck at life. Right? It's the opposite of excellent, right? There might be perfectly legitimate reasons why I would not blame you for having bad judgment, either in a case or in general. But you're still going to just kind of flop around at life. You know, you just are. And so that tells me that if there are reasons why individuals or groups of people are having trouble cultivating good judgment, that's not necessarily to blame them, but to say, what can I do, what can our community do to help them cultivate good judgment, to make an environment in which good judgment can arise. Suffersune, practical wisdom, right? In addition to that, without a certain sense of what's worthy of fear and what isn't, and applying that properly, you're going to suck at life across the board. Without a sense of balance and moderation in general about things, you're not going to do very well at life. You're going to struggle in various ways. So those kinds of virtues are virtues that seem to be necessary to be a human being well. And I don't just mean like getting by, but I mean to be an excellent human being. Insofar as you're a human being, you just kind of need those. Whereas other sorts of virtues are required for certain more narrow domains or sets of people, but not for a human being insofar as you're a human being. So the wonderful musical virtuosity of someone like Yo-Yo Ma, again, you know, that there are things that are required to be an excellent musician that are not required to be an excellent human, right? Or likewise, in other walks of life, to be an excellent carpenter is more narrow than to be an excellent human. You can be an excellent human while not knowing how to pound a nail, right? Or so on and so forth, right? So bringing that back to your question, Juliana, you know, how all of those virtues in their own domain will make you worthy of honor in some way or another. So for instance, I can honor someone like Pablo Picasso as a supremely excellent painter and also kind of a not very great human being, right? Right? So he's not worthy of honor qua human being because of like lots of massive destructive behaviors toward other humans, but he's nonetheless worthy of honor as a painter. Like, he really did produce magnificent art, right? So this virtue of magnanimity, as Aristotle seems to talk about it, seems to involve the totality of the core human virtues. That's how I read it. In the sense of you're honored not just for a particular thing or for a particular aspect, but you're honored as an excellent person, right? While leaving room for other ways of being honored, which are going to be not magnanimity, but also honor that you're entitled to in certain ways. Does that kind of begin to answer the question? It's a really good question. Thank you.
Two things. One, I don't necessarily intend for us to go down this rabbit hole, but just the last example that you gave, I'm thinking about this idea of leadership and what it means to be a good leader. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think I've had some interesting conversations where I have a tendency to have a hard time separating good character from good leadership, where others' conversations have said, actually, I don't care about that. Do they accomplish X, Y, or Z? Yeah. And maybe that's quibbling about the definition of what leadership means, but it does seem like there are certain things that it's harder to remove. Other virtues need to be part of X in order for them to be a good leader, whereas some may say they don't need to be part of it.
I think you sell yourself short with that word quibble
here.
I don't think you're quibbling. I think you're clarifying.
Okay.
I think in just the way that, you know, some virtues are anonymous, some virtues are homonymous. They seem to share one name when they're in fact two or three different things. I think disambiguating that can actually be hugely important sometimes.
Okay.
But carry on.
The one virtue that might be quirky to Aristotle, just that sort of invitation to think about that. And I know that I'm putting this out there. I know this is a very loaded concept already that has seen time in antiquity, but I think has some different meanings now how we use it. But I hear very frequently this idea of authenticity. And I'm kind of interested to play with that a little bit to see how that would work with the sort of the thinking that Aristotle provides. Does that make sense as a virtue? And what does that even mean?
If you don't mind, Marisa, could you, either by way of a general definition or by way of some examples, help us to get clear on what's supposed to go under that heading? We're all talking about the same thing together.
Mm-hmm. And I certainly don't have the end-all
definition, but you mean something when you use
the word. Yeah, certainly. I do think that there's a sort of trueness to self. Like, there's not a false front that's being offered to the world and even to oneself. It's like, here I am, world, you know, warts and all, whatever that is. Like, there's this certain way of moving through the world that doesn't have just these, I guess, layers of distance from your true essence.
I wonder if that ties with humility and magnanimity, you know, because you have so much leaders striving for honor.
Yeah.
Or trying to display. I like the conversation about what is excellence in a white collar world where, you know, you don't have the very tangible result of something that you built by hand, for example. And then if a leader can only show their worth from honor, then how are they then too authentic?
Yeah, and that turns something really interesting, Josie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Josie. In the sense that most of these, really all, I think that's a place where Aristotle is really going to choke hard on some of this discussion for a principled reason. In that all the virtues that it, yeah, well, that's, I'm not quite, right? Back that sentence up. I think Aristotle's still going to choke, but I think it's complicated. There's a certain sense in which I would like it that these virtues don't depend on other people. That in some sense, there's like, it's my own character. But yet, plenty of other examples do, right? I can't be generous if I'm utterly broke and have nothing to give, right? I'm dependent upon having sufficient material resources in order to be generous with those resources. And so a virtuous person is going to need to pursue just enough wealth to be able to give it appropriately, or else he will not be an excellent giver of things.
Well, but they could be a giver of care, you know.
Well, sure, so they're gonna need something, right? Mm-hmm. So here, when we require this approbation from others to know that we've done a good job, that is troubling, but maybe not a deal breaker. In a way that it's kind of troubling that I can't be generous because I depend on resources I don't have. Like, so I'm not manifesting generosity because I've got nothing to give, if in fact I have nothing to give, right? So there's an awesomeness that I could have that I don't, through no fault of my own, perhaps, right? I was just born into a destitute, impoverished village, my life. But there also is an objective way in which, on at least that one particular measure, my life sucks, if that's true of me. My life could be awesome in other ways, right? Like, I could be a great giver of love and of care, despite, like, not being able to actually keep alive my starving neighbors by, like, feeding them. Because love or care will nurture them in their final days, as it turns out. But it will not actually fill their stomach. There is a particular thing that I've not been able to do for them, which is a tragedy, but not something that I need to be blamed for. Mm-hmm. Unless, if I squandered all of my money and became destitute and couldn't help them, that I could be blamed for. Right? But so, So these are weird. That one is really weird to me about that need, like the only metric is actually being honored by other people, if in fact that's true.
So I wonder if, so that's, I think, why authenticity was an interesting one for me, because whether or not someone judge you, I mean, maybe an easier way, and to go back to your question about what is it, so if we're working on the same definition, is the distinction between an authentic painting and one that's a fake painting.
Yeah.
There is something about when it's authentic, it is coming from that, it is coming from that person and no other person. It is their style. It is their fingerprint, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And is that something? Certainly, I've heard it in more sort of generic usage that's something that's wonderful when someone's authentic.
Yeah,
it's a virtue, and that just seems kind of core.
I'm wondering about that in connection to Aristotle's pusillanimous person. Right, the person who, and then to another type that he doesn't quite give a name to, right? So imagine someone, we were talking about this person at the last stop, I think. The person who is not actually worthy of very much honor, but judges themselves to be worthy of exactly the amount of honor they actually are worthy of. Right, we could imagine such a person, right? Who, like, someone who knows that, like, you know, they're horrible to their spouse and their children, and, you know, a deadbeat in various ways, and right. But they know that, and they have an accurate self-description of themselves. So that there's something, it seems, about knowing where they are. But they would need to resist, just like the pusillanimous person, resting content with not being worthy of honor. There's a character flaw for Aristotle there, right? In the sense that, you know, that the pusillanimous person, you know, actually is worse off than the prideful person in Aristotle's view. Insofar as no one should aim for not being worthy of very much honor. That, insofar as we're aiming at excellence, is just incoherent.
But the person who is overly prideful can be more dangerous than the pusillanimous.
Right. But Aristotle thinks it's actually easier to reform their character.
Because they're aiming at the
because they're aiming at the thing that the good person aims at. So all you have to do is point out, yes, one ought to be a person who's worthy of honor, as you are claiming yourself to be. You're just not quite actually that. You have the right standard, you just haven't met it. Versus the pusillanimous person, who, as Aristotle reads that person, doesn't even quite have the right standard. It's a commonplace trope across Greek philosophy that, in general, if you haven't actually achieved excellence in some particular virtue, the closer you are to the good without being there, the more dangerous you are for any kind of good. And the farther away from the good you are, the less damage you can actually do. Right? Think about, you know, a rageful, vindictive 2-year-old with a blade of grass or a stick versus a rageful, vengeful, muscular soldier with, like, big, heavy weaponry. Right? there are achievements in strength and power and force of will that are good things when they're turned to good ends, that the child lacks. And because the child lacks them, the child is not as dangerous as the strong, confident, bold person who can use that strength and confidence and boldness to do a world of harm. That general pattern plays out with a lot of the ancient ethical theorists and metaphysical theorists, physical theorists too, right? It's even true at the level of physics, of the excellence of immaterial objects, right? A chair that obviously looks crooked and creaky with, like, cracks and splintering and whatever, I'm not going to trust my weight to it. A chair that looks nearly perfect but has a hidden flaw, I'm going to sit on it with abandon and then fall on the ground and impale myself on a splinter of wood, right? The chair that looks like it's almost right actually has more potential to harm me than the chair that makes its failures obvious. Right, by coming close to excellence, but not quite getting there. On the one hand, we only have a short way to go. But on the other hand, I think there's a general pattern that precisely by being so close to excellence, it's easy to miss that last little bit, and therefore both do harm and go on doing harm. Right? Think about the really charismatic sociopath versus the person who just nobody wants to be around, who's also very arrogant and self-entitled, but can't actually harm anybody because they're obviously a jerk, right? The person who can hide their sociopathy can do a lot more harm in the world precisely because they approximate the good better. Mm-hmm. And that's a consistent pattern.
Can you help me make a connection, if their connection was meant to be made, between authenticity and pusillanimous or magnanimous?
Sure. I can attempt to help you. I
can. But were you attempting to?
Yeah, I was trying to, and then.
Because I feel like I'm missing. Sorry.
Rob.
Thank you, Rob. I was kind of hooking in Rob's point here too, but so the idea that. There's something about not presenting yourself falsely that does reflect a kind of appropriate awareness. But on the other hand, no one should want to present themselves as a failure, even if they are one, because no one should want to be a failure. So being an authentic failure may be kind of a problem, right? Right? Just like the idiot who knows he's an idiot, right? You know, it's good for the idiot to realize that he's an idiot, right? But he should also then be motivated to remedy his idiocy. Right.
See, I'm an authentic failure, but I'm working on it. Right.
So, I'm thinking about, and I hope this doesn't resemble anyone present too closely. If not, I apologize. But there's kind of this thing, and only in the last, I don't know how long this has been, and it seems like it's getting more and more prevalent. The people who just shrug and say, yeah, I'm no good at math. Mm. But then don't try to, like, actually learn how to do math. Right? That the shrug, I'm no good at that, as an excuse to remain in mediocrity rather than as a spur to improve themselves in various ways. And for some reason, it's math fairly consistent.
As right? A teacher, Rob can attest to that.
Right? Right? But that's just weird. There's something that, like, well, I'm just being myself. I'm no good at that. Like, it seems like there's a real, like, there's no longer an aiming at excellence here in the other parts of our life, right? I don't know that accuracy by itself requires aiming at excellence. Right. And so I think that's where maybe for Aristotle, authenticity, as at least it's sometimes talked about, would go off the rails. Mm. Right. And to turn around the question, am I actually aiming toward excellence? And the pusillanimous person, to answer your question finally, seems to be not aiming at excellence. Right, he's not aiming at a position of being worthy of honor, which excellence requires, whereas the arrogant person at least is aiming at being worthy of honor, even if he's failing at actually being worthy of honor. Right, but he has in mind an aim of being recognized for excellence. He just needs to first actually be excellent. Right, so he's not there. He's vicious in that way, right? The pusillanimous person doesn't even seem to be putting himself out as someone who should be honored, whereas we should all be striving to be honorable, right? So authenticity seems to have a kind of ambiguity in it. Whether it picks up on that aiming toward excellence and being honorable, even if not honored, like appropriately honorable, right? Sometimes maybe, sometimes not, right? So in the spirit of, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing wrong first, but then doing it right, having gotten the wrong out of your system, right? Being honest about where you were as a striving for excellence. It's not clear that a lot of authenticity talk preserves that aiming at excellence.
That it's positioned more as a, this is what I am, sitting on one floor regardless.
This is who I am without a desire for change if who I am is less than excellent.
Content.
A kind of a false contentment, right? Mm. So the magnanimous person who's genuinely attained to all the human virtues, who genuinely needs nothing else to be worthy of honor from any other rational human being, qua human being, they may have a kind of content also, but a very different one, right?
And it really resonates with me, Marissa, because on that authenticity, because I've noticed an excessive use of authentic communications. I mean, it is used, is thrown around all the time. And I've noticed it over the last 10 years, I'd say, probably. And often I'm finding that when people are using it, it's almost the opposite. And so it's almost like, well, Aristotle probably didn't, authenticity probably wasn't even a word that was thought of then, because it's like they were the authentics. Yeah. And is everybody else attempting to be more? I mean, I'm bothered by it, and I'm baffled by it also.
There were so few people back then, it was harder to be anonymous. So,
yeah.
I mean, putting down a dollar for a cup of coffee and getting the reply, oh, perfect.
Wow.
It's another one that's bugging me a lot. Who's
buying coffee for only a dollar, by the way? No, seriously, I'm going to go there.
Well, it shows how imperfect it is,
right? You know, like, we used to have this phrase, dollars get you donuts. Now the donuts are so expensive, it doesn't work anymore. Right? But this idea of aiming at excellence, right? Mm-hmm. Which to hook back to the point we started with at this stop, right? Which doesn't mean blaming people or saying that people in some, like, deep metaphysical way are, like, eternally unworthy or needing punishment or any of that nonsense. But to be able to carve out this middle space between not throwing people under the bus for things that are not actually their own fault, on the one hand, but also not giving up on the aspiration for excellence on the part of every human being, as something we should be, Aristotle says, certainly, we should be aiming for excellence. I think he's right about that. But aiming for excellence in a way that is not pushing and crushing down others, right? Mm. In just the way that that wrestler doesn't aim at excellence by going and wrestling like the crippled kid in the hospital ward, right? He aims at excellence by finding another champion wrestler, and, like, both of them being pushed to their limit to be as awesome as they can in that wrestling, right? And to become better by rising to that challenge. But, you know, so for the narrow virtues like wrestling, I mean, there is a sense in which somebody has to lose a particular bout, but there's also a sense in which, like, you can honor your opponent for a really well-fought wrestling match, right? For really making me work for it, for really getting some great moves in there, in whatever ways, and so on and so forth, right? And in so many other kinds of things, there's not even that much zero sum, right? I can think about painters or carpenters or these kind of, you know, skilled people in whatever walk of life, teachers, right? The highest praise that you're going to get, the most meaningful praise, is from a peer whom you praise, right? If someone who I think of as a really amazing teacher says to me, David, you did a great job teaching that thing this morning, getting that from them is going to mean a lot more than getting it from just some random person. Because I know that they too are striving after similar standards of excellence as the ones that I am, right? But, you know, so on for building things, so on for physical feats of various kinds. Now, there are features you can't even appreciate of excellence until you're pursuing it yourself, until you've made some failures yourself, until you've, you know, been initiated into the process for the more narrow human domains. So I think something that aim for excellence is actually the part to not lose sight of, but to aim for excellence within the context of not over or undershooting, right? Not having excess or deficiency with some other axis that relates, right? The courageous person, he's exactly right at the pinnacle of judging what's worthy of fear and how much. And he is balanced in terms of how much fear he actually feels in towards particular things. Right, and those two go hand in hand in the Aristotelian mode. Why don't we kind of mosey on back to the parking lot, and, you know,